y'all. Welcome back to Let's Talk Travel with the Pretty Wanderer. I'm the host, Fatima Barnes. So excited to be back yet another week. It has been a very heavy week for me, but I'm going to push through and continue to work towards educating everyone on this beautiful world that is still around us. I got a lot of feedback regarding last week's episode about abroad aspirations, and with everything going on right now, I can see why people are definitely considering it. This week, we're going to continue on that path, and it's about to be dope. Why? Because we are talking to an award-winning global scientist and expat, y'all. So let's get ready for the expat experience. So before we move on to pulling out my tips from my luggage of tricks this week, I do want to start off with a statement in which I feel needs to be said. I am a Black woman. For my listeners who are listening, and I may have some that are not Black that may not understand, but I stand by the statement that Black lives matter. I stand by the movement, and I will continue to support it. I am a Black woman who travels this world, and I often every day experience some type of microaggression, discrimination, or racism, and I push through. I travel this beautiful, beautiful world only to realize that I have to come home to deal with certain things that no other people don't have to deal with. And so if you cannot take it on this platform, I totally understand. By all means, you do not have to continue listening to the show. But if you're with it and you want to continue, I am glad you're here, because this is supposed to be a safe space for everyone and women around the world. But more specifically, my goal is to connect other travelers with travel enthusiasts such as myself while educating and connecting within my community. So I appreciate my supporters who have been listening and who have been listening every week of all races, but I do want to make sure that my stance is noted. Now, on to today's tip, or as I like to say, pulling from my luggage or tricks. This week, I want to continue on that same kind of theme for last week with the tip. I talked about maximizing your time, and I discussed open jaw tickets and the benefits of that and how you can see multiple destinations in one trip. But there's also another way that you can do that, and that's actually called a stopover trip. So what's a stopover? A stopover is when, while you're on your way to your final destination, you have a layover, so to speak, that's 24 plus hours at another destination, right? So how does that look? For instance, when you fly from the U.S., typically, like for me, maybe Atlanta or Memphis to Paris, to Dubai, there is a layover option between you can either wait in Paris or you can wait in Amsterdam. You honestly have both options available to you typically when you book. So you can see that that's a typical layover destination on the way to Dubai, right? So a stopover would be, well, I want to spend on my way to Dubai, I want to spend 3 days in Amsterdam. I want to try to spend 3 days in Amsterdam while I'm there, and knock Amsterdam out, and then get to Dubai and enjoy the rest of Dubai and then come home. So that's a stopover. You're still maximizing your time. It's just that you're maximizing your time going to another destination as a long layover. And in the middle of your trip, as opposed to with open jaw tickets, it's kind of like you do it at the end, or, you know, you plan it out where you leave another destination to come home and you kind of maximizing your time at the end. So it's really kind of a matter of personal preference. Oftentimes you will find for those layovers on those long haul trips where the layover is 24, 25 hours, 25 plus hours or anything like that, you'll often find you can save money on those flights because there's such a long layover. The flights are usually going to be priced cheaper than the flights where you get there a little bit faster, right? So that's typical. So that is why I recommend stopover flights. My plan was to do a stopover flight this year. I don't know if that's going to happen with everything that's going on, but on my way to Africa this year, to Tanzania, I was supposed to have a 48-hour stopover in Switzerland so I can knock out going to Switzerland and Africa in one trip, right? That was the plan. So I don't know if that's going to happen, but I want to try to keep that plan for next year, right? So how do you book a stopover flight? Stopover flights can actually be booked in two ways. You can book them using a service like Skyscanner, where you can actually put in multi-cities. You can play around with it and see what cities actually stop where when it comes to multiple destinations. And then you can try to go to that airline's website. Most of the time, airlines do not typically allow you to book stopover flights on the website. So be mindful of that, that Skyscanner may be your best bet as it pertains to seeing what a stopover flight would look like. The second option is to call the airline. I recommend that as the best option because you're able to talk to the agent, tell them, they can kind of look into where those destinations are and they can book it accordingly and book you on a stopover flight specifically. Now, be mindful that not all airlines will actually do a stopover flight, and some airlines even will charge you to do it, but there are a lot of airlines where you can actually do them for free. If you're using your points, you want to be mindful of the stopover policy for the airline that you'll actually be flying with, not the airline that you'll be transferring your points from. So if you're an avid point user, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I may use my points through Delta, but they may put me on an Air France flight. So that's what I mean by that. So what you want to do is Google whatever airline you're interested in visiting, they're flying with. You want to Google their stopover policy. And that's simple. All you got to do is type in Delta's stopover policy. And they're pretty clear in layout what that looks like if stopovers are available. But if you call the agent to book it, you have a much better success. Oftentimes, some of those cheap airlines, they will probably tell you that there's like a fee for you to use them to book over the phone. So just be prepared for that. But other than that, you can actually just call an agent and tell them you're interested in flying to this place, but you were interested in a stopover flight or a long layover that's 24 hours, and they can help coordinate that with you because they can see it a lot better and have more visibility than what you do trying to use their website online. And even with Skyscanner, it doesn't show that option for all airlines. So that's why it's important to call the airline. So that was my tip for today, and that is stopovers. So the lesson over these last 2 weeks has been maximize your time to see more countries. That is the goal. So I hope that this tip was helpful. Now we've got to take a quick break, but I am so excited because when we come back, I'm geeked that we will be speaking to an award-winning global scientist and expat, Vivian Smith of Viv Wanders, y'all. So we're back, and I am so excited to introduce today's guest to you all. I just could not be more geeked, like, really, because she is the epitome of Black girl magic, y'all. She is an award-winning scientist who's made history on her journeys throughout the world. She's an expat and has lived in multiple places outside of the U.S. Her work with coronavirus has been amazing to watch unpack how she has been a part of that fight against the virus. Not only that, she is an HBCU graduate, and you know, although she's a Brave and they're my rival and I'm the I love all day, I still couldn't be prouder of another HBCU alum shining across the globe. I introduce to you all Vivian Smith of Viv Wanders, y'all. So how are you today?
I'm doing well. Had a long day, pretty tiring, but I'm doing good.
Good. I mean, I'm sure you have so much going on. You're like Black girl magic. You're doing so much. So like saving the world. So I just think that is so dope, like really dope. So I'm just so glad that you're here. I've been looking at your Instagram and I heard a lot about you from my friends. So I just was just in awe. Like, this is so cool to be interviewing you today.
Thank you so much. That is very humbling. And as much as I do, I never really think much of it. I'm like, oh, this is just, you know, this is what I do. This is a part of my job. It's not until I talk to other people that I realize that my job is not the norm.
It's not. It's so inspiring, especially for our people in our community and, you know, especially wanting people to get more into STEM and just, Of course, explore the world. I just think it is just amazing. Like, you might not realize it, but for me and others like me, it's a big deal. So,
Thank
very
you.
big deal. So, you are a Mississippi girl, right?
I am
Yay,
Mississippi Belle.
Mississippi. Yes. I was saying how you went to Alcorn, right? Yes, I love all day, but it's still I went to Jackson State, so it's still HBCU love, but still, you're a brave, so I did notice that. But
Well, I love Jackson State actually, and I'm probably one of the few people who don't participate in the rival because one of the people that I love most in the world is a JSU Tiger, and that's my little sister. She's a junior, well, she's going into her senior year now at Jackson State. So I was with her at Jackson State Homecoming about 2 years ago, and that was the first time I had been to Jackson State Homecoming, and I was like, "This is dope! I love it." We were on the yard. What do you guys call it? The plaza. We were on the plaza.
the
So
plaza.
yeah, I had a great time. I was like, "Okay, your senior year, I'm coming back to homecoming with you."
I love to hear that, because it is like this little rivalry, but it's all love at the end of the day. But it's still like this little rivalry. So you rarely hear most people that I know that went to Alcorn or that's a Brave, they always are like, oh, Jackson State, it's always this thing, and playfully, but it's always this thing. So I love to hear other people be like, oh, I love it. So that's awesome. So listen, this is why it's so inspiring. You're from Mississippi and you have ended up traveling the world as a scientist. Like, how did that happen? Like, how did that path kind of start for you?
So I was at Alcorn, and I was applying to medical school. And one of the things that I know for a fact that happens in the Black community, that happens at HBCUs, not all, but some of them, is a lack of information and a lack of resources for you when you're trying to get to that next level in your career. And so that's what I was running against. We had some free programs that helped you prepare for the MCAT, but I wasn't fully aware of all of those programs. And it was fairly new at Alcorn at the time when I was there. And so when I joined it, I don't think I joined it early enough to actually get the benefit from it. So I started thinking about other options that I had besides medical school, because when you are a biology major or something like that at any school, it seems like people tell you your only option is you're going to go to medical school. So that's what I had on my plate. And I applied and got in conditionally at some schools, but I shadowed a first year medical student, and it just didn't seem like it was something that I wanted. And then I also was going to have to do like a bridge program. So I was just like, you know what? Why don't I just do a fellowship anyway? Since they're making me do a 2 year bridge program, I could just do a fellowship. And I started really thinking about what I was interested in. And I realized that I was very interested in infectious disease, how like infectious disease affect the world, not just like the individual person, but if there was an infectious disease that got out into the world, how would it affect our economy? How would it affect our population? How would it affect our statistics as far as the epidemiology spread? So I realized that that's what I was interested in, and I actually got on Google and I started like Googling all these words like biodefense and infectious disease spread and things like that, and mainly I was like Googling those words with fellowship or research internships, and this fellowship actually came up. And it was the National Biosafety and Biocontainment Training Program through the National Institutes of Health. And when I looked up the description, it said that it was for postdocs. And so I was like, well, it doesn't look like they're doing anything that I can't do. So why don't I just call the head of the program and just explain to them that I have this interest and that I feel like I will be good, a good candidate, even though I don't have a PhD. So that's what I did. And they were like, well, the fact that you are an undergrad and you have the balls to call us and tell us that you should be in a postdoctoral program is enough for us to say that we will take your application into consideration. So if you fill out your application, we'll take it into consideration. Well, they took it into consideration. I interviewed. I killed it at the interview as a 20-year-old senior at Alcorn State University. And once I graduated at Alcorn, I started in this fellowship at the NIH, and it completely changed my life. So that's how I
Wow.
got to where I am.
That is just so dope. Like, I love the boldness. I always tell people, like, just go after stuff. Like, you never know. They can only tell you no, but just be bold. And so, for you to have been that bold and just been like, yeah, I can see why they accepted you. Like, yeah, I know who I am. I know what I bring to the table. And you didn't let that stop you. That is awesome. Like, I'd love to hear that, 'cause I was wondering how, like, what led you to, like, how did you get from Mississippi to, like, now traveling the globe? So what's some of the places that you've lived?
So I lived in Kazakhstan, which was quite interesting. A lot of people don't know about Kazakhstan, and I actually didn't know about it. I just got a call, and they were like, "Would you like to go to Kazakhstan?" And I was like, "Yes," because I knew I was ready for international travel anyway, and to actually live for an extended period of time. So Kazakhstan is this country that's right below Russia. So if you look on the map, it's literally right below Russia. It borders Ru Russia to the north, and it borders China to the south. And they're called Eurasians. So they're like they have this European Asian look. And it's a very interesting place. It's beautiful, the landscape and the mountains and the snow and everything. It was absolutely beautiful. The people are beautiful. One of my best friends is Kazakh. So I had a really good time while I was there. I lived in Vietnam, which was phenomenal. Loved living in Vietnam. Some of my best friends came from Vietnam. I lived in Haiti. Haiti was really, really a beautiful experience for me because my family is part Haitian. So it was really good to go back and see the roots of my family. And where else have I lived? I lived in Republic of Georgia. So Georgia is a country that a lot of people don't know about, but when we speak of Caucasian people, Georgians are true Caucasian people. So the people that we speak of in the United States and we call them Caucasians, they're actually not Caucasians, they're Europeans. Caucasian peoples are from the Caucasus Mountain area, and Georgians and Armenians and Azerbaijanians. They're all considered actual, like true Caucasians. But Georgia is a beautiful country, and the people are so nice and family oriented and loving. And I would recommend anyone to visit Georgia. So those are the places that I've lived abroad.
Girl, you just taught me so much. Like, I love to travel, but I've never lived. But you're talking about places, with the exception of Vietnam, that most people don't think to just visit there as a tourist. So, like, that really opened my eyes. Like, I did not know about the Caucasians, and you hear people say, like, the Caucasus Mountains and all that, and you just assume that what we consider Caucasian here is that's what it is. But that is some knowledge you just dropped, girl, because I did not know that. So that's very, very interesting. What were your feelings kind of when you first got the opportunity to move overseas? Like, what kind of thoughts were going through your head? Like, obviously you were just like, I'm gonna just go for it. But did you have any kind of feelings about family and support and leaving? What were your thoughts around that time?
So I had originally been offered to move abroad in 2011 when I finished my fellowship. But I was such a young kid at that time. I was so young and green, and I knew that emotionally I was not ready to make that step. And I remember talking to my best friend, and she was like, "You cannot leave. You should not go." And at that time, the Russia had tried to in well, not tried, they actually invaded Georgia, the country Georgia, around like 2009, and I was planning to go in 2011. So my friend was like, "No." You need to let them figure that out before you go there.
Right.
So I took her advice and I knew that I wasn't really ready. Like, as much as I think back on it and I'm like, oh, I wish I would have taken that in 2011, emotionally, I just was not ready. So my friend gave me very sound advice. In 2016, when the opportunity came up, I was like, let's go, let's do it. And I didn't talk to anyone about it. I just made the decision, I signed the contract, and then I pretty much just said, hey guys, I'm moving to Kazakhstan. So that's how that went.
I'm sure that was like a bomb drop. Was it like a lot of objections? Was it like a lot of whoa, whoa, whoa? Because you did the right thing waiting until you already signed the paper to just be like, okay, so I'm out. So how was that? Like, was it? I'm sure you there was a lot of shock.
You know, my parents are great. They really are. And they are very supportive, and they don't ever want to put any doubt in my mind. So if they had objections, they were going to wait to tell me because they didn't want me to be doubtful. So when I told them, the first question they said was, where is Kazakhstan? So I sent it to them on the map, and see, like, I know how I have to be with my parents. So I had it all mapped out. I was like, all right, this is where Kazakhstan is. This is what the Kazakh people look like. This is the political party in Kazakhstan. Like, I had it all mapped out so that they could feel comfortable. And they were just like, okay, it seems like you thought this out, and it seems like, you know, you're going with a company that's really safe and it's putting your safety first. And it's going to be a good experience for you. And actually, the objections that I got was from my friends. My friends was like, no, you can't leave. Nope. My best friend was like, I'm getting married soon. So how you gonna leave? And you gonna be my maid of honor? Then what you gonna do? So the objections came from my friends, not my family, but everyone was very supportive.
That is so good. You're so blessed and fortunate to have that. Because, especially we, as you know, living in the South, sometimes people can be very like, oh, you don't want to go over there. So you are very blessed in experiencing that. I'm glad to hear that. That kind of just gives you confidence as you kind of go about your journey as well, knowing that you have support behind you while you're there. So I'm really proud to hear that. I love that. So, how was that experience? Like, I know you've lived in different places and I'm sure you've had different experiences. And I know you kind of touched on like some of the different people and things like that. But working abroad, like, what was that dynamic with coworkers and working so with different people that are just not just living in their environment, but actually working with people that are totally different culture?
So in Kazakhstan, I was just like a supermodel there. Everyone thought I was so beautiful because, you know, they had never seen this black girl with this big curly hair. So they were just like, oh my gosh. So it was quite interesting coming into work. And I would just come to work dressed up like how I normally go to work, dressed up in the United States. And they would just be like, oh, you're so dressed up all the time. And you just look so beautiful. And you're just so well made up. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's just normal. That's what we do in the States. It's not even just me, it's everyone. So I definitely felt like they made me feel so beautiful all the time. And in Vietnam, I think it was the same way, but in Vietnam, because the people are like, they're smaller people and they focus a lot on their weight and weight control and actually trying to be as small as possible. So in Vietnam, I got a lot of comments about my curves and my body, and my coworkers always pointed out if I lost weight or gained weight. So it was very, very different in both countries.
They do that a lot in a lot of the Asian countries, like, oh, you're so big, and it's like, you're really not. Because first of all, let me just say this, you're gorgeous, by the way, like
Thank you.
body goals and everything, hair goals. So like it's no surprises how they felt. So I get that. So I can imagine though, if you're trying to work sometimes, then that could kind of be like it's was there any times that you were kind of like, we're just like, can we just focus on work? Did it ever get annoying or did it ever become like a nuisance or was it just like you just kind of took it all in and just went with it?
I definitely got annoyed because there were some days, just like with most people, you're not feeling your best. You're not feeling like you look your best. You're not feeling your best. And so you don't want everyone pointing out your physical features all the time. And so there were days where I was just like, okay, guys, like enough is enough. Like, I just really want to just come into work and not be told that I look like I gained weight because, yeah, I feel like I gained weight and I don't feel good today. And I don't want you to point that out. Or like my butt is so big. My coworker in Vietnam always was like, oh, your butt's getting bigger. And I'm like, okay, I don't need you to point that out. So I had my days where it was too much.
I bet I can imagine that could kind of be too much sometimes. So I know it seems like friendship and sisterhood is important to you. Did you ever ex did, how was your experience with finding like your tribe while you were overseas? What was that like?
Oh my gosh, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. I was so blessed. So in Kazakhstan, one of my best friends, and I know she's going to listen to this, so I'm going to call her out. One of my best friends is Medina. And she was just honestly probably the most pleasant person I've ever met in my life. She just exuded light out of her. She was just so caring, so loving. And I remember when I first met her, I was like, oh my God, like why is she so nice? Like why is she just like always trying to help me with something? Like I got it. It's okay. And at first I thought it was because like she was like, oh, this new foreigner is here and she was just trying to like get to know me because I was a foreigner. But then like I got to know her and I realized like she's like that with everyone. That's just what type of person she is. And a very personal story that I actually never share with anyone publicly. But my mom was really sick a few years ago, or actually like a year ago. And I remember I was talking to Nadine, and I call her Nadine, her name is Medina. But I was talking to her and I was telling her that I was really worried about my mom. She called me, she's like, I feel like something's wrong with you. I feel like something's on you. You know how connected we are. What's going on? And I was crying. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm worried about my mom. And so I said, my mom has to have this surgery. She goes in at this time. So my mom went in for surgery at 3 p.m. US time, which was 3 a.m. her time. And so she called me and I told her, I said, yeah, my mom should get out of surgery about like 3 or 4 hours. So around 6 a.m. she called me and I was in Vietnam at the time. So I was still close in the time range with her. And she's like, how's your mom? Did she get out of surgery? Okay. And I said, yeah. She got out. And I was like, oh, Medina, I can't even believe that you remember that. And she was like, yeah, I've been praying for her since three. So from 3 a.m. until 6 a.m. when she thought the surgery ended, she had been praying for my mom because she's a devout Muslim. And I just bawled. I just
That is
cried
so
so
sweet.
hard. Yes. So that was my experience in Kazakhstan. And my experience in Vietnam was just like, it was just like black girl magic, black boy joy all over
It.
the place. So they just, oh my gosh, my friends in Vietnam just poured into me. If I ever doubted how great I was, I do not doubt it anymore after that because just randomly they would be like, oh, you're killing it. You're doing this, you're doing that, you're doing amazing things, you're so great, you're beautiful, your hair's growing, your skin's popping. Like it was just like all this positivity when I was in Vietnam. So I had a beautiful experience with my friends abroad. Like that's probably the one thing that makes me want to travel abroad even more, just the people that I meet.
That's so true. Isn't that beautiful to have had that, especially in Vietnam, at a time where you would hear, oh, your butt's too big, or you're this, and to have them to kind of just be like, yes, you fine, you this, you that. Like, I'm sure that is so beautiful. A lot of I've noticed that that's a common theme when I talk to people who have worked abroad or lived abroad, that they always kind of talk about the common thing with their experiences with like friendship and sisterhood is like that it's just been like the best thing ever. 'Cause that is important, especially being away from home. Like, I'm sure they sort of become like your family while you're there.
Yes.
Exactly. That is
Yes.
beautiful. Like, I really love to hear that. Love to hear that. So while you were there, you traveled to multiple places, I'm sure, right? Like, you traveled all over and took advantage of that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And living in Vietnam, you could take a 1.5 hour flight and you're in Cambodia. You could take a 3 hour flight and you're in Japan. So it was just like
Yes.
you live in Vietnam, you have to travel because you'll never be in another space like that where you can just hop from country to country to country within like under 5 hours and pay like $200 round trip. Like it was just
Yeah.
unheard of.
That is, listen, I know you still have to work while you're there, but I probably would be somewhere every chance I got, like every weekend or something. Like, I probably would be, especially knowing that a flight is like 1.5 hours to those places, whereas from here it's like 20 plus. I
Yep.
think that's so dope that you got to take advantage of that, 'cause your pictures are, I love the pic your pictures. They are always gorgeous, always
Thank
gorgeous.
you.
One place that you talked about in particular, and especially at a time like this in the world, is I noticed you spoke about Africa on your page. I
Oh,
believe it was
yes.
Ethiopia and your experience there. Can you kind of tell the listeners about that, about your experience going to Africa while you were there?
So I had actually, when I first moved to Vietnam, I went to South Africa to celebrate one of my really good friends' birthday. So my first ever experience to Africa was South Africa. But I feel like my first true trip to Africa was Ethiopia because South Africa is beautiful. It really is beautiful. The people are really beautiful. The landscape is just gorgeous. But we all know the history of South Africa and apartheid and things like that. And so South Africa is actually quite diverse. And while I was there, I didn't see many Black people until I went to Johannesburg. And when I was in Johannesburg, the people were really nice and they were, very supportive. But even still, it didn't feel, it was more so like I was seeing like a lot of people that were helping me because they were working. They were workers. Then I went to Ethiopia and it was just Black everything. I was like, oh
Oh,
my gosh.
love it.
When I got on Ethiopian Airlines, this is my first experience with this ever. I got on Ethiopian Airlines. All of the flight attendants were Black. The screens that they had up and they were giving the safety messages, all the people in the safety messages were Black. And I was like, wow. I was flying first class. Everyone in first class was Black. I
Oh,
was like,
yes.
look at this. So it was definitely a different experience going to Ethiopia.
Wow. And when you got there, so it kind of seems like when you were in South Africa, it was like, okay. But when you got to Ethiopia, it was kind of like, okay, like this is it. This is what I think of when I think of Africa.
Well, I saw some of these school kids. So I went to one of the museums, and I can't remember the name right now, but it's the museum that houses the fossils of Dinkanish. And Dinkanish is the first recorded human ever. So she was the first person that they found that walked upright. And so they found her fossils like years ago, and they did some carbon dating on it and determined that she had to have been the first human that walked upright, and she was in Ethiopia. So while I was there, I saw these school age kids that were coming to the museum, and I saw this girl and I was like, oh my gosh, she looks so much like my sister. I had to take like a double glance, like, is that my sister? And it was just like, wow, like I'm in a whole different country and I'm seeing people that look like my family. And like everyone was just like, let me help you. Let me make sure you're okay. I went to this area, the Denkali Depression, and that's where this volcano used to be, and then the volcano dried out and it left this very sulfuric region that they called, didn't call it depression. And I remember I went out, I was with my really good friends who are amazing people. But I was there and I started getting really hot and I just wasn't feeling all that great. So I was like, you know what, let me go back to the car because I don't want to faint out here in front of these people. So I'm like walking back to the car, I'm dehydrated, I'm really, really faint, and I'm disoriented. So like the landscape all looks the same, but I know that I came up one way and I went back another way. So I was like, all I need to do is just go back. And I definitely was getting a bit panicked because I was like, oh my God, I don't know where I'm at. I can't see my friends anymore. I don't know if I'm going in the right direction. And this Ethiopian tour guide, he saw me and he was like, sister, you okay? And I was like, yeah, I think so. But he was like, he could just tell. He was like, okay, something's wrong with her. She just clearly is a bit disoriented. And he told his group, stay here. He was a tour guide, he had a whole tour group. He was like, stay here, I'll be back. And he walked me to the point where I could see my car and was like, just keep going. And he called them and told them, like, oh, you know, she's a bit disoriented. Someone needs to come meet her. And I was like, oh my God,
That's
that's so
love.
amazing. Yes.
Right. That's like love. Oh, I just cannot wait to experience that. I was supposed to go to Africa this year, but then Corona happened. And now it's supposed to be in September, but I don't think it's going to be safe by then, or at least I might not feel comfortable enough yet to go. But that's the experience I want to experience. Like all this, just like you said, black girl magic, black boy joy, just like that experience of, did you feel like you kind of connected with the land and like where you were? And did you kind of feel like I'm at home? Like they say you feel like that when you go to Africa.
And Ethiopia specifically. In South Africa, I didn't really feel like I was at home, but I felt like, oh, I could live here because it was beautiful, it was diverse, all of that. But in Ethiopia, I was like, oh my God, like I feel like I am at home. Like I feel like the people connect with me. I didn't feel unsafe. D they definitely know you're American. Like when people say, oh, all black people look alike, we do not, because all you got to do is go on over to Africa and they'll let you know, oh, you're American. And I'm like, how you know? How you know I ain't Ethiopian up in this thing? But they'll let you know. But it doesn't matter though, because they're just like, they see you and they see you as someone that's a part of them, because we can connect in related experiences. And they just really treat you like you are one of them.
I
So
love that.
it was great.
I love that. So for those listening, you gotta go to Africa. Just go, 'cause that's it. Just I just cannot wait to experience that. I love that you had posted that, because a lot of times when people kind of talk about Africa, at least especially when we were growing up, and I've said this before too, it's almost like this. They don't tell you like, oh, you should go to Africa to go as a tourist or to visit. If we were always kind of like deterred, or it was like this negative connotation about going to Africa. So I do love that where people are going more and more and more and encouraging, going there. And every time someone goes, I usually hear most of the time that they've had positive experiences like that they've had.
If anyone wants to go to Ethiopia, I have the most amazing tour guide who will make your experience beyond anything you ever thought it could be. So I will definitely connect you if you want to go to Ethiopia.
Yes. So when for those listening, she just let you know. So when you're ready, hit her up so you can get that information. Because I most definitely will probably hit you up. Because when I go, I want to kind of go to more than one country while I'm there. So that because I was going to go to Tanzania and Zanzibar, yes, and Kenya. So I think that's on
Yes.
that
And then all
side.
you got to do is just put Ethiopia in that. That is like the perfect three country trip for East Africa.
Really?
Tanzania, Kenya, and Ethiopia.
Yes. Okay. So what? Because I'm sure they're going to probably cancel it. So I'm going to have to rebook everything anyway. So when I rebook it, I'll add that on there. Because I was going to do Zanzibar, Tanzania. I think my hotel was maybe like in Tanzania, but then I was gonna go to Kenya while I was there. But you just made me want to add Ethiopia to it and get the whole
Please.
thing. So
Yes, you
I'm
should.
gonna hit you up. I'm definitely gonna hit you up about that. So
Okay.
I'm definitely, because I want to go. I really do. I want to experience that. And I think especially now with everything that's going on in our country and in the world, I think you probably we would just have this newfound kind of look at who we are if we just go there and experience it. I don't know. I really want to experience that. So I'm gonna hit you up. Thanks for
Please do.
the information. So funny story. I was putting two and two together. So I followed the Black Travel Movement page, and I remember before I realized that it was you that you had posted on there about the capsule experience in Australia, and Australia's on my
Oh
bucket
my
list.
God.
And I remember being like, "Oh, that is so cool! Like, I really want to try that. Like, oh, that's so interesting." And then it wasn't until I realized later, once my friend connected me, like, "Oh, you should reach out," that that was you. And I was like, "That is a funny coincidence," because I remember when you posted that, and I remember thinking like, "Oh my God, I'm kind of claustrophobic, but I really kind of want to try that." So can you tell us about that experience in Australia and the capsule experience? Because I think that is so cool.
My experience in Australia was probably one of my best trips I've ever taken.
Wow.
And I can say that because I think, like, I was just getting to the point where I had been living in Vietnam for so long, and I was just like overwhelmed with, people not speaking the same language as me. And Vietnamese is very hard. Like, I was taking lessons and I was trying my best, but it is a very hard language to learn. So, like, I was living there for 2 years, and I still only had like maybe like kindergarten level Vietnamese. So it gets overwhelming when you can't communicate. And then from Vietnam to Australia is an 8-hour direct flight. And I thought to myself, I need to go to Australia now because when I get back to the States, I'm probably not going to want to take a 20-something hour flight from there to Australia. So I went to Australia just because I was like, I should just mark it off and mark one of the continents off. And I did not realize, like, when I got there, how much I needed that common experience. Like, you go to Australia and it's literally the opposite of the United States in every way, except they have their own, their democracy, but they have different like political structures. But other than that, on the surface level, it's a diverse place that has black, brown, people, white people. Everyone speaks English. They have like all the same stores that we have, except probably better with some of the food. And so, it's like it's just its comfort. So if you go there, you don't feel overwhelmed. You don't feel like, oh my God, now I have to learn a new language or have to learn how to say hello in this language and bye in this language. The only thing you have to learn in Australia, coming from the States, is the money. And the money is also very similar, as far as like the currency exchange rate. So that was very much comforting. And also, I knew that I wanted to have a two-level experience. So most of the time when I travel, I would stay in hotels. And my friend, her name is Devin. Her Instagram handle is at Ready Set Fro. But she was like, Vivian, you need to start staying in hostels when you travel. You're always staying in these hotels. You should stay in a hostel. So I was like, okay, I'm going to have a split experience. The first few days, I'm going to stay in a hostel. And the last few days, I'm going to stay in like a nice hotel. I ended up staying at Sofitel that overlooked the Sydney Opera House. So the hostel, I was like, okay, I'm going to choose the capsule because I always wanted a capsule experience. They had one available. I'll do that. And when I got there, I was just like, this is so dope. I'm so glad I did this. It was just so unique. And they'll even give you like a little space suit pajamas, like if you wanted to buy that. It's so cute. Or they'll just let you rent some, like if you want to do a photo op. It was so cute. And then when I got in there, what I really liked about it was that it wasn't open. So like we're all, I think it was like one, two, three, four, five, six capsules. in the room that I was in because I opted for one of the smaller rooms. Some of the bigger rooms, they have like 20, 30 capsules in one room. But my room just had six. And there was some privacy. I could close the capsule door and I could talk to people if I wanted to, or if I didn't want to talk to anyone, I didn't have to talk to anyone. And my six suite mates ranged in age. There were some people that were like young, some people that were my age. This one guy, he was an older guy. He was like, yeah, I'm just traveling through Australia. He's from California. He's like, I'm traveling through Australia. I wanted to save some money. This was only like $20 a night, so I
Wow.
decided to do it. Yeah. So it was so neat. I'm very glad that I had that experience. They had an air conditioner in there, so it wasn't like I was hot. There was a TV in there. I could connect my Netflix.
Wow.
There was like multiple plugs in there for me to charge my phones. They provided you with headphones so that you didn't disturb your neighbors. It was a really good experience. I would definitely do it again because of my experience in Australia.
Wow, you just kind of inspired me. So I'm supposed to for 2021 go to Australia. And when I go now, I really want to try that. But I am kind of like a hotel snob too when I travel. I'm kind of like, well, is it a Westin or a Sheraton or something like that? Because I'm trying to do better, but I definitely am kind of brand loyal to that. And I stayed in a hostel one time in Paris because I think our flight got in at a totally different time. I think we booked the hotel for like the day after the flight. We got confused on the time or something like that. So we had to find somewhere really quick to stay. And I think it was like $20 a night. It was $20 for the night. And it was this little bitty room. And I was like, I cannot do this any longer than this one day. Like, get me to a hotel. But I was I you when I saw that post, you made me kind of consider like, you know what? I would want to try that when we go to Australia because that just looked really cool. So you inspired me. So I'm gonna have to hit you up again about something else with those details because I definitely, when I saw it
Yeah.
on the on your pictures, I was like, that is so cool. Like something I probably would have never thought of or thought to do at all.
And you only have to do it for one day, like what I did. I think I did it for two nights, and that was enough.
Yeah.
I was like, okay,
You
that
got your experience,
works.
and then you went on to your hotel.
Exactly.
You went
Exactly. To my suite.
on to your hotel. That makes sense. Right. You went on to your suite, and you lived your best life. So I love it. So one thing that I did want to ask about is, I put award winning in your in when I let them know who I was speaking to because you are an award winning scientist. And you made history. Am I correct in assuming that?
Yeah, that's so weird to say, but that is true. Yeah.
So how did that come about? Like, what can you just tell us about this award and like how that happened?
So the award is the Billy Richardson Young Nuclear Biological Chemical Researcher Award. Very long title. And the way that this award works is so that all the Seaburn research institutes in the United States nominate someone from their research institute. So Seaburn is chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, I think energy sector. So all of the companies that work in that sector, which is it's a lot of them in the United States, they have to nominate one person from their company to go up to compete from this award for this award. So my company looked at all the I think it's like 30,000 people that work in my company, and they said Vivian is the person that we think has the best chance to actually win this award. So they nominated me, and I didn't even know anything about this award. I was just living my best life in Vietnam trying to get my work done. And they told me, we're nominating you for this award. You need to fill out this application. And honestly, I was like, oh, I'm so busy. Like, I got all this stuff to do. I'm not really trying to do another application. And they were like, no, this is not an option. This is, you have to do this. So I honestly was like not taking it seriously at all. And then, so all the other companies that do this work also had to nominate one person from their company. And the requirements is that the individual has to be 35 and younger and they had to have done like two or three like things that were like above the norm for someone that's like 35 and younger in this field. And then you had to have letters of recommendation backing those things that they did. So, of all the people that were nominated, I was selected. I was like, oh wow, okay. And I remember even then, like, because I was in Vietnam at the time, and one of the two-star generals, which is a big deal, that works for my company, called me to tell me that I had actually won. And I was like, oh, okay, thank
Still
you so
not
much.
thinking.
You know, I was just, yeah. So he was like, yeah, I'll be in touch. And so he's like, make sure you invite your family. Make sure you know that you have people that are coming. And I'm like, oh, okay. So it's not just me. It's like a thing. So, okay, let me let my mom and dad know. I honestly was taking it so lightly. And then the press articles came, and my director of media relations was like, well, Yahoo News wants to talk to you, and AP Business wants to talk to you, and then these people want to talk to you, and Frederick News Post. And I was like, so what is this award again? So I honestly was oblivious all that time. And then I got there to receive the award. And I learned that I was the first African American woman that had ever won the award. Didn't know that. And then the general, he was talking to my parents, and he was like, do you understand what your daughter has done? Like, do you understand the history that she's made? Do you understand how many people were nominated for this award, and she was selected out of all these people? And it was me listening to him that made, at the award ceremony, by the way, that made me finally realize like what a big deal it was. And I was like, oh, okay. Okay, I probably should start taking this seriously because I'm not really. So yeah, that is my story about the award. I hope every award I get is like that, where I'm oblivious up until it's time to give
That's how
the
you know you're just doing your thing. You're just doing your thing, and then look what happened. That's what happened. So I just thought that was so dope. I had to bring that up. Now, are you back? You're kind of transitioning back, or you have transitioned back to the US. How has that experience been like being back home, so to speak?
Weird.
I can imagine.
Very weird. So I had gotten accustomed to this lifestyle. Like in Vietnam, I had a cook and I had a cleaner. And that's just normal in Vietnam because it's the Socialist Communist Party. So everyone has a job in Vietnam. So your cleaner comes with your apartment. It's not like, you know, oh, you make so much money, you have a cleaner. No, it's just a part of your rent. And usually, someone will recommend a cook to you because in Vietnam they want everyone to work, and the way that that works is that everyone supports everyone. So if you're someone that's in like the middle class and you make enough money, then you support someone that's in like the lower middle class or the low income class by hiring them to work for you to do something, and that can be cooking. So I remember just really like loving that because I loved my cook. She was like, you know, she came to my house, she was on there for an hour, but like I knew that if I was sick, she was gonna bring something and that she made at her house that was gonna help whatever ailment that I had. And I loved my cleaner, and I loved the door guy, and I loved my driver. Like everyone in Vietnam worked because that's
Good
just the way
thing.
the community was. So coming back to the US and being like, oh, I gotta do my own groceries. What is that like? So like going to the grocery store, I was overwhelmed. I'm not gonna lie. The first time I went to the grocery store, I was like, there's too many aisles, there's too much. I don't know what I want. I'm leaving. And I just left the basket in the middle of the store and left. I was like, the next time I come back, I'm gonna have a list because this is
Was too
crazy.
much. You got used to
It was
it.
too much.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been a very interesting transition.
Wow. So do you plan on like taking another, going somewhere else once, COVID, and 'cause I know you're kind of fighting that fight now. So is do you plan on, doing it again?
Interesting enough, my company is bidding on a project in
Oh,
Ethiopia.
wow.
And I'm hopeful that if we win it, I will go there as the expat on that project. So that's what
I
I'm
hope
hopeful
you get
for.
it as well. Like, I really do. I really, that would be so dope. That would be so dope. So this part of the show that we're about to go into is called Travel Tea, and that's usually a topic or like a versus or something like that in the travel community that we talk about. And so this week it is curiosity versus ignorance, right? So when you lived over, you've gotten to live here and you've gotten to live over there, and you had so many different experiences and different things like that. What was that experience like, or how hard or easy was it for you to distinguish like the difference between someone just being curious of you, especially like you said, being a black woman with natural curls and curves versus someone just being ignorant? Like, was there ever a time where you would just ran into just pure ignorance, or was it mostly curiosity? What was those experiences like?
So I definitely had a very traumatic experience when I was living in Kazakhstan. I don't like to tell this story because I don't want to taint the total experience that I had in Kazakhstan. But when I was at my apartment, so Kazakhstan is a male-dominated, male-driven society. It's not something that I'm saying to be mean or rude. It's just actually the truth. And everywhere you go, you'll read it. They'll say male-dominated society. And for that reason, women are experience some issues that maybe we can't even understand in the United States. So one of the things that they do to try to protect the women in Kazakhstan is that if you live alone and they send like gas meter people, because they have, people that come read the gas meter. If you are a woman living alone, a woman has to be the gas meter reader for you, or your landlord has to do it. But a man that works for the company cannot come and check your gas meter, just for protection of the woman. So I remember not realizing that that was the rule, or that that's what they did. So the guy came to my door one morning, and I remember I had on like a robe. I had on my pajamas under the robe. And he showed me his badge, and I was like, oh, this is the gas meter person. So he came in, and I remember I was speaking to him in Russian, the little Russian that I knew, and he was asking me how many people live there. And I was like, but these are such odd questions for him just coming to check the gas. It shouldn't matter. He's just going to check the meter. How much gas did I use? So then he pulls out his phone, and he asked me if he could take my picture. And in Kazakhstan, that is just something that always happened to me everywhere I went. Everyone would ask to take a picture with me. And I said no, because I was in my bonnet, like, no.
Right, you
And
at home.
right, in my robe. So I'm like, no. And so he's like, oh, pajosta, pajosta, pajosta in Russian is please. And so I was like, no. So then he grabs me by the neck and he like puts me in a headlock to take a picture with me. And I
Wow.
have never had that happen to me before. And I pushed him off of me. I was, of course, I got really upset. I got really scared. And he was just laughing. He thought that I was just like being like a girl that's just like overreacting and just being too emotional about something. And I was like, wow, like that's really, he's really ignorant to the fact that that's inappropriate. And he just
Right.
said, I'm curious about her. She's a person that I've never seen before, and I want to show people that I ran into this type of person. And I don't care that I'm making her feel uncomfortable, or I don't even realize that I'm making her feel uncomfortable. I'm curious, and so I'm going to do what I need to do to satisfy my curiosity. And it was the most traumatic experience I've ever had, because I've never had a man do something like that to me.
Wow. Wow. And I'm honestly, I'm not a fan of like, especially when you go to certain Asian countries and they want to take your picture. I've just never kind of been a fan of that. I don't know. At least for me, it kind of makes sometimes if they're like over the top, it kind of makes me uncomfortable. So for him, for it to get to that point where it was a little bit of both, really, I guess, curiosity and ignorance, t to the point that it made you uncomfortable. I definitely could see how that would be just too much or traumatic, actually. Did you ever feel like, with your experience there, like, did you ever feel like the pictures and photos, it ever got to be too much? Did you take that as more so curiosity, or did you take that more so like ignorance? Did you sense any malice in their intent to do that?
Oh yeah, like this one lady, she was helping my nail tech. So my nail technician. So in Kazakhstan, I worked on a remote military base. So I would travel to that military base and I work on that base for like 3 to 4 days out of the week. So you know how girls are. I don't care how remote it is, it's gonna be somebody there that can do your nails and do your hair. So I found that one person that did nails. And so I was in her salon, and the one lady that was there as her helper took a picture of me. And they were always like, "Oh, your hair, oh this, oh that, oh your body, blah blah blah." And so like I just never thought anything of it. And then she showed me the picture, not realizing that I could read Russian and speak Russian. And it translated to, she sent it to her friends, and she was trying to make it seem like, "Oh, I'm sending your picture to my friends. You're so beautiful." But it translated to, "Look at this beautiful gorilla." And I was like,
Oh, wow.
"What?" And she did not realize that I could read Russian. And so I said, "Oh, let me take a picture of it." They, "Oh, thank you so much." Took a picture of it. And I confirmed. I went back and I put it in Google Translate because I was like, "All right, my Russian may not be that good. I've been taking Russian for about 7 months
Right,
now,
try
but
to
it
give it
may
a
not be
benefit of the
right."
doubt.
Nope, put in Google Translate. That's exactly what it translated to. And I said, "Never again. If an Asian person takes my picture in East Asia, it will be because they snuck to take it. I would never pose for a picture again. I would never freely give them my picture because this is what they're saying about me when they talk about me to their friends."
Girl, that's hurtful though. Like, no matter how you want to admit it, like, that's hurtful. And that I just why I just never have liked that. I know they did that to I believe I was in Hong Kong. Maybe I was in the Hong Kong airport, and I was just like, get away from me. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't want to take a picture of you, because that's exactly where my head goes. It's like, that's what they do with that a lot of times, which is really purely just ignorance. Like, it's really not at that point. You're past just like, I'm just curious, to now I'm just being ignorant. Because, to say that, that's horrible. Like, really
Like,
horrible.
I'm not a gorilla. You said that to be facetious.
Right,
And
exactly.
I was just like, "How horrible of you. Like, you're making me feel like you're being honest and this is like a serious situation. And you're actually going and making fun of me and joking
Right,
about me."
right. And it's so sad that, especially as a Black woman, that even, over in America, we know racism and ignorance and things like that is very much in your face. But over there, it's when you're in other places, we still have to sometimes experience things like that, where they still look at us a certain way wherever we may go, like different places we may go. And it doesn't, we usually will still have great experiences and things like that overall, but it's sad that we still have to experience that sometimes when we go places, which we all know, you nothing like a gorilla, okay? Nothing, but
Thank
still,
you.
yeah. Like, I could still see how that could just be hurtful. A friend of mine, I think she was on the last episode, she lived in the Philippines, and she would like experience things like that too as well. And when I was saying, like, when I went to go visit her, how I was just so uncomfortable at times with like the staring and the just like, I'm talking about not just like I'm gonna glance and stare, but like I'm gonna do a full body turn and stare at you. And I'm just like, oh my God. Like, she eventually, I don't think you ever get used to it, but I know she eventually got kind of used to it. But for me, that time that I was there visiting her, I was like, how in the world can you focus like that? Like, the total stares, like the just that kind of thing. So
You
yes,
learn
I
to ignore it.
Yeah, I'm sure you do because you're there so long. You just kind of you just ignore. That's probably the only thing you really can do is just ignore it, really.
We've got to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to take some questions from our listeners. Okay, we're back and we have two questions from our listeners. The first question is from Tanisha out of Oakland, California, my hometown. So, Tanisha says, how did you handle the stares, hair touching, comments overseas and distinguish between malice and curiosity? I would like to expat one day, but I'm not sure if my attitude is ready yet.
So the way that I handled it was that I preemptively prepared myself for it. So I say, you know what? I know I'm going to be different for these people. I know I am going to a country that's very homogeneous. They've only seen one type of people probably their entire life. So I just prepare myself mentally to not feel attacked all the time. And once I prepare myself for that, I also prepare myself for how I would respond to hair touching, how I would respond to staring. And I pretty much had a script in place. Like, no, this is not okay because of this reason. And so my whole approach was just educating people as much as I could. And I had really great support systems. So in Georgia, I had Georgian friends that would explain to these people in Georgian, like, that's not okay, you're being ridiculous. In Kazakhstan, I had Kazakh and Russian friends that would explain in their languages that it wasn't okay, and same in Vietnam. Vietnam is like a little different because people are all about like saving face, so they don't like to embarrass people and they don't like to feel embarrassed. So in Vietnam, if you just make them feel embarrassed, then they would just stop. So that's how I prepare myself.
Wow, that's a good way to do it. You just kind of pre-planned it out, had your script ready, and that kind of helps you a lot with dealing with that. Because for me, I have anxiety, so certain things like that could trigger my anxiety. So to offset anxiety, I have to prepare stuff like that. So that's good advice. So for the listener who says your attitude isn't ready, just try to prepare for it and get ready. So that's good sound advice. All right. So the second question that we have was from Rose. And Rose says, oh, she didn't say where she's from, but Rose says, with all that's going on in America now for Black lives, do you predict and encourage more and more Black women or people of color to start moving and working abroad? That's a good one.
I think that no matter what the state of the United States is, all people of color should experience something outside of the United States. Because it's not until you leave the United States that you understand fully how the world really operates. And you start having a better respect for other minorities. And you also understand, like, oh my gosh, I can live in a space where I don't feel unsafe, where I don't feel like I'm going to be targeted for my skin color, where I can go for a run. And yeah, people may stare at me because I look different from them, but they're not staring at me because of hatred towards me. So I think it's a very unique experience to live abroad. And I absolutely encourage it in everyone, no matter what the state of the United States is. And one of the things that I'm always like dropping these little tidbits of knowledge that I always tell people in the United States is that abroad, we are called the states or the United States. No one says like Americans or very rarely or America. Because we are not the totality of North America.
Right.
So, like, people, like, this one guy, he was from Costa Rica. And this Vietnamese waitress asked him if he was from America. And he's like, yeah. And she's like, oh, what state are you from? And he's like, I'm from blah, blah, blah place in Costa Rica. And she's like, she's so confused. And he's like, you do know that there's more of the Americas than just the United States, and that United States is a part of North America. It is not America. And she was just like, her face was like, oh my gosh. And I'm listening to their conversation. He educated me. I was like, he is right.
Yeah.
I need to stop saying America when it comes to United States. It is the states or United States. We are not the totality of North America. So get up out of North America and leave the United States so that you can have an experience outside of what we have to deal with here.
Right. And it make, like you said, it does make you look at things a lot differently. Even I never lived outside of the US, but I definitely love to travel outside of the US. You kind of can't help but look at things differently. You learn more about how other people do things and how they live, and you start to realize really quickly that even though there may be some stares and some hair touching, it still probably would never be to that point of just like you said, feeling that I literally have anxiety every time my husband leaves and go to work, you know, because he's a therapist, he's an occupational therapist. So he goes in people's homes and he has to go through these neighborhoods. And I have a lot of anxiety about that all the time. But I honestly, most of the places that I've been abroad for the most part, I usually feel a lot safer. Like, I don't feel like, oh, wow, someone's going to come up to me and just, or a cop may be having a bad day, or somebody may be having a bad day and just shoot me or are threatened by me totally, that, you know, I don't feel like my skin is weaponized. Maybe curiosity, maybe some ignorance and things like that. But I can take that a lot more than, oh, wait, like, I could be killed for my skin. So, that is so, so true. I agree with you 100%. I'm honestly am not opposed to moving out of the U.S. one day. Like, I really am not opposed to that. And I said that before the state that we're in, but I agree with you 1000%. I think once we start to experience those kind of experiences more in our community, which is why I kind of started the podcast in the first place, is I wanted to show our community and others who don't travel, and not even just Black people, but a lot of times, you know, the typical American doesn't even have a passport. So just to show them or explain the benefit of like using that passport, going somewhere, seeing somewhere different and learning from someone in another culture. So I highly encourage, like you said, people to just go and leave, and you learn. And I mean, just in here talking to you, I'm learning from your experiences and the things that you've learned and hearing all of your knowledge. And I'm just like soaking it all in. So just imagine if people just really kind of went out there and just saw the world.
It would change your life.
Yes, it will. It definitely will. I always say that. I always say that. Actually, most people who are travelers say that. Like, because you can't help but kind of change. You kind of can't help but change as a person. So I will say that. Well, you know what? I have really enjoyed learning from you. I have learned I've learned so much from our conversation alone. I'm over here like, oh my God, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Like, that's interesting, girl. Like, I think that you are so dope. I keep saying that, but I just can't stress it enough. And I'm sure that you have inspired so many people and so many of my listeners just by listening to you, and they're learning as well, just as much as I've learned. So I want to thank you for taking the time to come and speak to me today. I like I said, I just can't stress it enough how glad I was to talk to you. So how can my listeners and myself as well support you? How can they connect and support you?
I think the best way is just following my page, at Viv Wonders on Instagram or on Facebook at Scientist Wonders. I think that's the best way to support me, because I post so much useful information. I post job information and just connecting with me so I can help bring the next person along is the best way you can support me.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that is so dope. Well, thank you again, and you have a good night.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for being so gracious and keeping me so humbled. I really appreciate being here.
Oh, no problem. I definitely will be hitting you up for my future travels as well, because you definitely can help me out with some of these places. So we will be in touch. We will connect.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Bye. Bye.
How amazing was that? I mean, if you are not inspired after hearing me speak with Miss Viv Wanders, I don't know what to tell you. But thank y'all again for listening. I have some people that listen every week, and I am so thankful and appreciative of it. Keep the feedback coming. I always want to know your thoughts. Keep the emails coming with your questions. Don't forget to submit them. You can send them an email, or you can do a voice message on my Anchor page. There's a section where you can leave me a message that can be featured on the show. So don't forget about that. And you really want to have your questions ready, because next week we're going to take it a step further and we're going to talk about solo travel. So you are not going to want to miss that. Have a good week, y'all. Good weekend. And as always, I will catch y'all on next Friday.